Hi, this is Kalina.
And this is Gabe.
Welcome to
Bigger Than Love. Yes.
It's Halloween week, the season of ghosts and endings, of flickering candles and shifting light. The air feels thinner, like something unseen is whispering just beneath the surface. Leaves loosen their grip, the earth exhales, and everything around us, nature, rhythm, time, invites us to release. It's a perfect week to talk about Shavasana.
Oh, not ghosts?
No, Shavasana, the yoga pose that lives at the edge of both endings and beginnings.
I thought it was pronounced Savasana.
Savasana? I mean, you could call it Savasana if you want.
Kalina, ever since I met you, my life has never been the Savasana.
The Savasana, also known as corpse pose. When you think of Halloween, what pose do you think of?
The first thing that comes to mind would be pyramid. I think of
pyramid pose? The makes first... you think of Halloween?
Well, the pyramids, I think of people dressing up as Cleopatra.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, today we're going to be talking about Shavasana, the yoga pose that lives at the edge of both endings and beginnings. The pose of stillness, surrender, and sweet return. And for some people, the pose that makes them run out the room. Shavasana, or the corpse pose, is usually the pose that a lot of people think looks like nothing, but ask everything of us. It's that quiet finale of a practice, but it's also a heartbeat. It's the place where everything we've moved through, stretched through, breathed through begins to settle and make sense. In a world obsessed with movement and progress, I think Shavasana asks us to do the opposite, to pause, to dissolve effort, to trust gravity, to be held by the ground itself. And it's a kind of spiritual composting, if you will. Everything you've carried, all the tension and striving, melts back into the soil of your own being. And in that soft stillness, something new can begin to grow. And Halloween reminds us that endings aren't failures, they're thresholds. And Shavasana is that threshold in yoga between effort and ease, noise and stillness, self and something greater. It's the moment in every practice where you stop doing yoga and start becoming yoga. And I thought it would be a fun week to talk about this, not only because we're doing a special class this week on Shavasana, but also because time is about to change, new seasons. We're moving into the holiday season where I think we all need a little bit more rest. So hopefully you walk away from this episode maybe being inspired to, at minimum, stay for the whole class, stay for Shavasana, and maybe in a bigger context, maybe doing Shavasana longer, even on your own. So we're going to talk about that today. How excited are you, Gabe?
I'm very excited. I love Shavasana.
Why do you love Shavasana?
I like Shavasana because it's the opportunity to take stock of whatever you're doing during class. Sometimes I find myself, depending on my mood or my headspace, in different states. Mm-hmm. And Shavasana often is like, no matter what the class was like and no matter where I was in class, it's an opportunity to come back to the same baseline.
I like that. So Shavasana means corpse pose, but it's not about death in the morbid sense. It's about the art of dying consciously. And in yoga philosophy, death isn't seen as an end, but as a return, a dissolving of form back into formlessness. Each breath, each exhale is a micro death, a release, a letting go, a surrender into something larger. So Shavasana gives us a chance to practice that surrender intentionally, to let go before life makes us really. The Gita calls the body a temporary garment, one we wear for a time and then lay aside. I like to think of that to you as just like we're all borrowing everything, even ourselves, like even the body that we live in is borrowed. And the self or Atman is not bound by it. So every time you enter corpse pose, you are rehearsing this sacred exchange, remembering that you're not the doing, the striving, or even the body itself. You are that awareness beneath all of that. In Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, he talks about surrender to something greater than your personal will. And Shavasana is the physical embodiment of that. It's trust made visible. It's the exhale that says, I'm safe enough to stop. I'm safe enough to take a break, to pause. And I think we spend so much of our lives gripping to identity, to productivity, to control. And Shavasana invites us to practice dying to all that, just for a few minutes, to feel what it's like to be free, free of striving, to release the performer or the achiever, the fixer, and return to just being a witness, to be able to see ourselves. And this is where yoga becomes integration, not effort. Every pose and every breath, every moment of concentration finds its home here. And Shavasana is the body saying, I've done enough. Let me rest so I can remember. It's really a practice of remembering, of being that witness. It's probably the number one posture of trust and also the posture of being held. That quiet permission slip that whispers, you don't have to hold it all right now. And in that soft stillness, something really ancient stirs within us, not an ending, but a remembering what's eternal always within you. I often use the phrase, your heart's desire, but I think it's that part of all of us that is never changing. It's always the same, constant.
I really like the idea of just borrowing this body.
Yeah, I do too. But everything's borrowed, right? Like our car is borrowed, our house is borrowed, our pets. Everything is just here for such a short period of time. I think we forget that sometimes. It's really cool to have a chance to just be able to pause and have gratitude. There's also quite a bit of science behind the posture, and underneath all this poetry, like a philosophy, Shavasana is really a masterpiece of physiology. The body understands what the mind often resists, that true restoration really does require stillness. I think we know that, but we don't always do it. Mm-hmm. So when you lie down and release effort, your autonomic nervous system shifts gears. And the sympathetic, the fight or flight or the fix-it response finally steps aside. And the parasympathetic system moves in quietly, like dusk after a long day. And this is the rest and digest branch, governed largely by the vagus nerve, which winds its way from your brainstem through your heart and your lungs and your belly. And it's this great communicator between your body and your sense of safety. So when this vagus nerve is soothed, your breath slows, your heart rate evens out, your blood pressure lowers, your muscles begin to release their armor, and your brain waves, those quick chattering beta patterns, begin to soften into alpha and theta rhythms and the same frequencies that we touched just before sleep or maybe just before you go deep into meditation. And in those slower waves, the body begins to reorganize and repair. Neurochemicals shift, like cortisol, the stress hormone drops, oxytocin and serotonin, the chemistry of calm and connection start to rise. Your lymphatic and your glymphatic systems quietly go to work. We talked about those in a previous episode, and they clear waste, balancing fluids, flushing the residue of doing. It's like the body is whispering, I got you now. And this is all going on underneath the skin while we're resting. Shavasana doesn't really add anything new. It just removes all the interference. It lets your biology remember what to do when it feels safe enough to just stop. And often those little cleanup crews that need to come in, they don't go to work until you turn the lights off and you kind of quiet the space. And
why do I feel like you're kind of referencing Fraggle Rock's Doozers right now?
Doozers. And then also I was thinking of on WALL-E, the little cleaners that come in and they're like cleaning up. Yeah. It's like that, but we have those little cleaners inside of doozers. I really like to imagine that I have little doozers coming in and cleaning up. I feel like a doozer. I should have went as a doozer for Halloween this year, but it's actually not too late.
It's not too late.
We are recording this before Halloween.
So yeah, you got a week.
It's not too late to
pivot.
As I'm saying this, I really want to be a doozer now. Anyway, even your heart rhythm changes. The spaces between beats become more varied and more resilient. And that flexibility is a marker of health known as heart rate variability. And studies show that it improves through rest and breath and practices like Shavasana. It's literally your heart learning to trust and pause. And that's what this pose teaches again and again, how to rest without guilt, how to surrender without collapse, how to feel alive fully in an absence of effort. And I think that's hard for some of us. How do we feel fully alive if we're not doing anything in a world that maybe has taught us to feel guilty when there's not effort involved? When you give the nervous system permission to rest, the body doesn't shut down. It actually wakes up in a deeper way. Energy redistributes, tension unwinds, and the internal noise quiets just enough for you to hear that quieter pulse, the rhythm underneath everything. In that stillness, healing doesn't feel like something you're doing. It feels like something that's always been happening. You just finally got quiet enough to notice and to hear it. And in that way, I think it's really beautiful. There is some preparation though, right? Like if I told you just lie down, well, I'm talking to the wrong person. I was going to say the average person, not Gabe.
Shavasana master.
Yeah, you are kind of a master of chilling. But for some people, like there's a little preparation that they can make the process a little easier to get to.
Preparation S.
Yes, preparation S. There's a little bit of setting the stage, you know, having the environment quiet and dim light, comfortable temperature, because when you start to relax, your body temperature actually goes down, so you don't want the room to be cold to start with. Props are really nice, bolsters, blankets, small cushions, sometimes a folding a towel under the head, and in some spaces, there might even be eye pillows available to put over your eyes, use sound or chimes. The chimes actually cue the nervous system to kind of downshift, just like white noise. And the position of your body too, like feet falling naturally outward, legs slightly apart, arms a few inches from your sides, and the position of the spine and the jaw, the tongue, and the eyes. But small adjustments can make this more comfortable for some people, because lying down can be uncomfortable for some people in the population. So it's important to note that if you need to change position or maybe lay on your side or change the props, that it's not necessarily that you need to look like you're doing Shavasana in the traditional sense of like what you think of just lying down with props. It's that you're in a state of Shavasana. Shavasana is a place we go. It's not necessarily the shape of the pose. Like you're not having to be laying down straight.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important. And these little small adjustments at the beginning prevent restlessness and fidgeting later, which is the gateway to the stillness and allowing for a check-in, because sometimes it feels fine to use the same props in the same way, but sometimes there can be kind of a habitual pattern of always setting up the same way. In yoga nidra, we talk about setting up your nest, your station the same way, but your body doesn't always need the same thing every day. So being able to adjust is important. And also anchoring the mind, beginning with some long, slow exhalations to cue the vagus nerve. You can add body scans, or naming body parts can be really cathartic, or internal mantras. I'm breathing and I'm calm. I'm breathing and I'm releasing can be some mantras. And there's a little bit of debate. What's the optimal duration that you should take Shavasana? So if you're using it in a class context, for those of you who are listening who are teachers and students alike, what's a post-class integration of Shavasana? And it's usually recommended 5 to 10 minutes for Shavasana. And in that 5 to 10 minutes, the heart rate, the blood pressure drop, muscles switch from sympathetic tone to parasympathetic recovery, which is important if you've been doing something challenging like a hot yoga flow or hatha flow. If you're doing kind of a full nervous system reset or like a yoga nidra style, it's recommended more of a 20 to 30 minute span of time, because the brain waves move from beta to alpha to theta. It's not till that past the 10 minute mark that you really start getting into the body, alerting cortisol to fall, oxytocin to rise, the glymphatic part of the brain to increase waste clearance. It doesn't really happen until you've been there for a while. And if you're really looking for burnout recovery or deep restoration, then you can even extend it up to 45 to 60 minutes. And that's where you can see changes in heart rate variability, improvement, or you may have heard teachers say that like Shavasana is equivalent to sleep, but not really till you get to like that 45, 60 minute mark. It can feel like you've taken a 2 or 3 hour nap in its restorative effect. And that can be really quite liberating if you use Shavasana almost kind of like a midday adult nap time. Especially if you're feeling kind of a dip in energy, you can actually come out of Shavasana feeling very energetic and revived and maybe more creative and ready to go about and finish whatever it is that you had planned for the rest of your day. So I don't want it to seem like this is something that needs to be done at night. Although it can be a great preparation for sleep, it also can be a great preparation for any other part of the day that maybe you need to focus, clearing out space and creating clarity. Even something like a micro Shavasana, like a workday reset, doing Shavasana for 2 to 5 minutes can be really helpful in a quick shift toward parasympathetic tone, lowering perceived stress and mental fatigue. Sometimes you just need a few minutes. So here's your permission slip to just get a bolster and 700 blankets and 6 or 7 blocks and just post right up in front of your boss's desk. No, I'm just kidding.
Wait, a bolster. I always thought it was pronounced bolstar.
We can call it bolstar. I know you call it bolstar.
Oh. Would you like a bolstar for Savasana? But it's, would you like a bolster for Shavasana?
Correct.
Oh, all right. Well, I said corrected.
I actually like the way that you say it, though.
I always thought that was the traditional way.
With all this, there is a little bit of a scientific sweet spot. Research on yoga-based relaxation and HRV show that like 8 to 12 minutes is enough to measurably reduce cortisol and increase parasympathetic activity. And anything beyond 20 minutes just amplifies those effects and promotes the same brainwave patterns as early deep sleep, but without full unconsciousness if awareness remains. So this is not about sleeping, but it is about creating that brainwave pattern that it's similar to when you're falling asleep. That's pretty cool. Like, there are some practical guidelines that you can follow. Time proportional to effort. So roughly 10 to 15% of total practice length. For example, what I mean by that is if you're doing a 60-minute class, 6 to 9 minutes of Shavasana. So this is one of the reasons why, like, I in classes will often give a few minutes and then say, you know what? I encourage you to stay a little longer, linger a little bit longer. It's only going to enhance the effects of your practice. Longer is fine if you have support, meaning bolsters, things like that, and blankets, and short but consistent beats. And also coming out of it slowly, introduce movement, your fingers and toes, your knees before setting up. You don't want to just stand up really quickly and leave, and which often happens in the practice space where as soon as I say goodbye, people are just up.
Yeah.
Obviously, I want people to come to class and whatever they get from it is what they get from it. I don't get to decide that. But man, I sometimes wonder how much more chill everyone would feel and be if they just stayed for like even just 3 minutes. You know, just give it a try.
Like, I get it.
Don't knock it till you try it. As you say, we're all Big Macs in our own mind. Like, we think we got to hurry up and go, I want to do something.
Do something. Totally.
Even I can be that way too. So I get it. But here's our invitation. So why does this matter? Shavasana is not just the end. It's really the moment the body records what the practice taught it, hormonally, neurologically, even in our actual anatomy. So skipping it is like closing your laptop without hitting save. You wouldn't do that. You wouldn't spend an hour working on something and then just not save it. You'd be really upset. And so it really is so important. Your body needs time to store the information, to quote unquote save it. And stillness isn't the absence of yoga. It's actually where yoga takes root. So just some food for thought. So you might be wondering, like, well, then why is it so hard? Like, if it's so great for me, why is it so hard to do? And for something that looks so peaceful, corpse pose can be surprisingly uncomfortable. Stillness sounds like a gift until you try to receive it. And when we lie down and within seconds, the mind starts to protest. Did I answer that message? What's for dinner? Am I doing this right? Why can't I relax? Everyone else seems relaxed. Mm-hmm. The body's going to start to fidget and thoughts may spiral and silence grows loud. And it's here, right in the resistance, right when you want to flee, that Shavasana actually begins. And we spend most of our lives in constant motion, not just physically, but mentally, emotionally, energetically. We're wired for output. Always reaching, refreshing, reacting, producing. And the nervous system becomes fluent in acceleration. Like, it's a professional at accelerating, but not in arrival. And so when you finally stop, your system doesn't really recognize stillness as safety at the start. So it's really, really normal to feel uncomfortable at first, to want to leave, to feel your mind racing. It's doing exactly what it's designed to do. And it can interrupt rest as vulnerability. And not everybody feels good feeling vulnerable. That sudden lack of motion can feel like free fall for some, and like you've dropped the armor that's been keeping you upright. And the stress chemistry that's been humming quietly in the background, adrenaline and cortisol, the constant hum of doing, doesn't vanish just because you lie down. Mm. It needs a few minutes to realize the threat is gone. The heart's going to keep scanning for what's next. The brain's going to keep checking the exits. And it's like an engine learning how to idle after years of running hot. And yet, this is the training, to stay in stillness long enough for safety return. In fact, you can even tell yourself that, I'm going to stay here until I feel comfortable, to let your body relearn that rest isn't danger, that stillness isn't punishment, that silence doesn't mean something's wrong. And that language of the nervous system, rest is learned through repetition. So if you don't do it and you don't repeat it, you're not learning anything. So each time you choose to stay, each time you breathe through the fidgeting, each time you let the mind wander and then return, you're rewiring that safety and rewiring what safety feels like. And this is why rest can bring up emotion. tears, laughter, memories, even anger, they're not distractions, they're releases. So if that stuff's coming up for you in Shavasana, that's a good thing. That's the rewiring that's happening. The body's way of exhaling years of held tension, of saying, I didn't know I could stop running. I didn't know that I could take a pause. In yoga philosophy, this is the practice of pratyahara, that withdrawal of the senses, turning inward from the external noise toward the inner landscape. It's not escape, it's integration. It's what happens when awareness no longer needs stimulation to feel alive. And I think that that's something that gets lost. You are a whole living being. You are breathing. You have this machine that's doing all this magical things for you. I gave you all kinds of science just a second ago. Like, all this stuff is going on and you don't have to do anything. And that is worth stopping and noticing. Way cooler than any Instagram post or, I don't know, anything cool on your phone. You being a human, you're actually the thing that invented the thing that you're so mesmerized by. Like, people invented that. It's super cool, right? I think this stillness also invites us to strip away distraction. It reveals the subtle layers of self, the places that maybe we avoid, the truths that we postpone. That's a big one. I know that's been a big one for me. Like, what kind of truths have I been postponing? Because when I get still, then I gotta face them, right? Maybe the sensations that we suppress. And when we finally stop moving, all of these layers rise to the surface, asking to be felt. And that's why Shavasana is sometimes called the hardest pose in yoga, because it requires trust. It asks you to lie there and let yourself be seen by your own awareness, to meet yourself without the choreography, without the disguise of effort.
I like that. The disguise of effort.
Totally. Stillness is a mirror. And sometimes what it reflects first is everything we've been running from. But if you stay, if you breathe through the awkwardness and the ache, if you let yourself feel the weight of the ground without rushing to escape it, something changes. The nervous system softens, the muscles unclench, the thoughts lose their edge, and what was once discomfort becomes depth. And eventually stillness that once felt threatening can start to feel like home, maybe something you even look forward to. Silence that felt empty may start to feel alive, and the rest you resisted becomes a place that you can return to, not just at yoga class, but anytime you need it. That's why this pose teaches us how to be with ourselves, how to rest in our own company without needing to fix, explain, or perform, or even invite someone to do it with us. It's not just the body lying still, it's the heart remembering how to belong to itself. Such a beautiful thing. I don't know. I think it's a tough sell. I mean, even though I'm saying all these things that I really feel and believe, there's so much science to back it up. Also, I'm completely aware of how challenging it can be, and maybe even scary. There's also this element, the meaning of death and return. And Shavasana is sometimes called the rehearsal for death, but it isn't about fear. It's actually about practice. And so what is that practice? It's the practice of release. The willingness to let go, to trust the unknown, to let parts of ourselves dissolve so something wiser can emerge. And like I said earlier, in yogic philosophy, death is not an ending. It's a doorway, actually. The body changes, but consciousness, or it's called Atman, remains untouched. Return to the same vast field we come from. Every breath mirrors that cycle, the inhale, birth and becoming, the exhale, release and return. And so in Shavasana, we honor that rhythm consciously. We let the body fall back toward the earth. And in that falling, we remember we are not separate from it. Death, in this sense, is not darkness, it's merging. The part of the dance where you surrender the lead. It's the quiet trust that what you release is not lost. It's transformed into something new. So every time you lie down in Shavasana, you practice this art of surrender. You let the chatter die down. You let the ego unclench its grip. You let the tiny performances of daily life fade, the striving, the managing, the subtle ways we try to prove our worth. And in that emptiness, something really sacred happens. The space that fear once filled begins to open. The breath softens. The body reclaims its natural intelligence. And awareness starts to glow in places you hadn't felt in a while, maybe. This is not death as loss, it's death as renewal. A shedding of old, a clearing of the clutter, a reset of the nervous systems, trust in life itself. And when you rise from Shavasana, that quiet moment of transition, you are, in a small way, being reborn. Your eyes open back up to the world, but you're seeing it from the other side of surrender. Colors feel a little richer, breath feels a little freer. The edges of the day seem softened like the light after rain. And each Shavasana is like a tiny death, and every breath after it is rebirth. You die in your roles, your effort, your control, and awaken to your presence. Maybe the part of you that can love without guarding. And maybe that's the secret of this pose, the hidden teaching behind its stillness, that every ending is also an invitation, that letting go is not disappearance, it's actually a return. Return to the body, return to the breath, return to love, the one that's bigger than fear, bigger than striving, bigger than all the stories that said you had to earn rest. And Shavasana teaches us the practice of that soft dying. So when real endings come in our life, when we're not in the yoga room, we can meet them with grace. So when life changes shape, we don't cling, we breathe. And so when love asks us to surrender, we already know how that feels because we've practiced, because we've laid on the ground, trusting gravity to hold us, trusting life to return to us. And if you've done this, then you've already found out that it always does. So here we are at the end of this short but sweet episode and the beginning of something else. The space after the exhale, the echo of movement, the quiet heartbeat of rest. And outside, the season is turning and Halloween flickers through doorways and candlelight. The trees are letting go of their leaves, and even the air feels like it's practicing surrender. It's kind of softening away from the heat a little bit. And I don't know, maybe we're meant to do the same. Shavasana teaches us that endings are not punishments. They're invitations to listen, to soften, to return. As a reminder that every time we let go, we make space for something new to arrive. Every time we rest, we create the conditions for life to reorganize itself. We're so used to measuring our worth by our emotion, by how much we produce, how much we hold, how much we fix. But the body knows another truth, that sometimes the most powerful thing you can do is nothing at all. Stillness isn't the absence of living. It's the fullness of being. It's what waits underneath the noise. It's the love that never needs to be earned. So this week, as the world celebrates ghosts and endings, let yourself have a small ritual of stillness. It doesn't have to be dramatic, just a few minutes to lie down, to breathe, to let your body remember that safety and rest belong to you. Let gravity have you. Let breath move how it wants to. Let your heartbeat be enough. Let yourself feel, cry, whatever you need to do. Because when you practice letting go in small ways, even just something as simple as letting your shoulders relax or your jaw relax, you start to trust that big letting go is okay too. The one that happens when everything changes. The one that reminds you that you're not your doing, you're not your plans, not even your name. You are what remains when all that is gone. The awareness beneath all of that, the breath, the love that keeps pulsing quietly beneath every ending. Shavasana is a rehearsal for letting go. A return to yourself, return to presence, a return to love. So take one more breath, let it be soft, let it be enough, and have an amazing week. May you accept this invitation. I know I'm excited to rest now. I'm really stoked. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Have a great week.
Three peace. Spooky peace.